Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Crime and Coffee Couple. My name's Allison.
And my name's Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Did you see me sneak in that hello?
I did, and this time I knew what you were doing.
Good, good.
Last time I said, what the heck is this guy doing?
You know, for one thing, communication is key between a married couple.
True. I would say.
And now that we've communicated about, you know, my weird things going on this side of the room, then I think we're a much better spot right now.
Expectations.
Yeah.
I keep them low.
Right.
It keeps us going.
And boy, oh boy, do I work to keep them low. Because if I start doing too much around the house, it's like then you have expectations that are high, and it's like, oh wow, you're like responsible for this and this and this. Like if I have one thing a week, I'm doing pretty good.
It's true. When you do say, if I'm telling you, okay, we got to get a lot done today, you're like, one to two things at a time for me. I'm like, oh my goodness,
that makes me sound really, really stupid.
Don't tell me more than two things.
I'm just trying to tell you that, because after that it's just kind of in one ear out the other.
Must be nice, because meanwhile I have a running list of about 95 things that need to be done.
Well, and another thing, I don't know if we've ever talked about on this podcast, but about, we probably have, but this is part of my memory loss, internal monologues.
Uh-huh, we sure have.
Okay, so we talked about it with our son, how, yeah, we just had kind of a fight with him yet last night.
Oh, that was a treat.
Yeah.
Right before bed.
Yeah, because you walked in here, I got this new video game I was playing, I'm like clicking and clicking and having a
gay old time.
Yeah, great time, a medieval like little town I'm setting up, and I got a cow, and I got these people milking the cow,
and then Allie P comes busting in.
It's like, Mike, I don't know, I told him to clean up his room and he's not doing it. And I'm like, okay, time for dad to step in. So I walk in there and it's like, all right, we told you to clean your room today, and it's like 11 p.m. at night, and you haven't cleaned your room. And he's like, okay, I will. And we're like, right now. He's like, get out of my room. And I'm like, whoa, you don't tell us what to do.
I'm sorry, our room?
Yeah.
In our house?
This is like ours. Not just like saying it's, you know, mine and yours,
but
like
families.
All of ours. Like, yeah, I mean, they should have their private quarters, obviously.
100%.
But it's time to, you know, put up or shut up. And so I was like, all right, get up right now. And I grabbed him a little bit, and I was like, all right, I shouldn't have like done that. It was more than a little bit, but I got very angry. And
we're not physical people. I've never literally touched my kids. I'm just not. Been a hitter.
I like a good
You're
grab.
A grabber.
I grab on
You'll
the
grab
arm.
By the arm.
Yeah, be like, all right, get up, you know. And then now he's getting bigger.
Well,
so
he's like
good.
6 feet tall.
Yeah, so it's getting a little dangerous. Like yesterday, I'm like, if he really wanted to push me back, like I would definitely be able to push him harder, but I don't want to
get into
that.
Well, we're never going to get to that.
Right.
Please.
Well, it's like he's getting to be an adult, and, you know,
that's not how we roll. Let's communicate respectfully, because Lord knows otherwise it's like an adult tantrum.
Yeah totally. So yeah, we got him to finally clean his room. I don't know where I was going with
yeah
this
where
story.
Were you going with that?
I don't know. I guess it was communication, maybe.
I don't know.
Okay, whatever. So else do you have? Got your Portillo's cup over here. We got a Chicago hot dog today at Portillo's. I don't know if you guys all have Portillo's near you. This isn't an advertisement, I would tell you otherwise. But man, love a Chicago dog, an Italian beef sandwich from Chicago.
With some jardinier.
Oh, and summer's coming up. And if you love like going traveling, like Chicago's an awesome city to go to go visit. I know there's a lot of like things in the news. It's just like any other big city. You know, you go to the right parts and just kind of stay away from, if there looks like trouble, stay away from those areas. But it's a beautiful city in the summertime.
Yeah, we love Chicago. Yeah. Obviously, we were born and raised outside the city, but... Yeah.
And I got one more thing to bring up, if I may.
You may.
The Sirius XM just came out with like Channel 13 for Taylor Swift radio. Mm-hmm. So our daughter is a huge Swiftie.
She's pumped.
Yeah, so we get to listen to Taylor Swift radio.
Well, which our son is thrilled with.
Yeah, and I was like, oh man. Like, I could take like three Taylor Swift songs. Like, the ones that everybody knows, those are cool. But like,
I love her.
The ones that are like lovey and slow, it's just like they sound the same to me. So it's like, I'd like to have a little variety, you know?
Sure, I get that.
So, and she happened to hear us talking about Swifties.
Yeah, last night, our son brought it up. Yeah. He's like, her new album. He's like, I swear if Swifties would love it no matter what, if it was like, wah, 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 the whole album was that, they'd be like, it's great.
Yeah, she's trying to be like the deep dark side and like trying to figure out different things. And you know, I was just kind of quiet. I was like, I don't know. Maybe they would. Maybe they wouldn't. You guys are like, no, they definitely would. The Swifties would love it.
Our daughter was cut deep by our comments.
Real deep. And she's like, guys, I heard the whole thing.
Don't get me wrong. I like Taylor Swift. I think she's very talented.
I love Taylor Swift. I'm a big fan. I think she's great. So she heard us and we got caught on that.
We are not allowed to talk negatively about Taylor Swift in any way, shape, or form to our 12-year-old daughter.
I was like, sweetie, you know what? You can be just confident in your love for Taylor and that's okay. It doesn't matter what other people think. But she's like, but I love you guys.
She's like, and you're my family.
Yeah, we're like, yeah, that's true.
We have a whole saying around here. It's don't yuck my yum. Mm. Because really, I mean, why crap on what people like?
Yeah.
It's not cool.
Yeah, well, I saw a TikTok. Somebody was playing pickleball. And some commenters were like, why do people watch these things? Like, why is there an audience? And it's like, well, hey, good news, buddy. You don't have to go watch mm-hmm. pickleball. You can stay at your house and look at TikTok all day if you want.
To but each
these,
their own.
These people like it, so let them do their thing.
Exactly. It doesn't if it's hurt not you. Hurting anybody, let them be.
Yeah, hey, I want everybody to spread some positivity somewhere. If you see like something happening, like Allison sent a couple messages to some other couple podcasts, mm-hmm. Crime Salad
and True Crime Couple.
True Crime Couple. And we have our besties, Till Death Do Us Part. Those are three awesome podcasts to listen to. But Allison was like, you know what? I really love their podcast. I think I'm going to message them. So she got on my phone because it's on my Instagram and sent them a message saying, you guys are doing awesome and I love what you're doing. So
we always have the mindset, if you're thinking something nice about somebody, tell them because mm-hmm. it'll brighten their day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So people do that for us all the time. So thank you.
Yeah, we do appreciate it. And on that note, should we dive in?
Yes.
All right. So this is a listener suggestion from Avery, and this is the abduction and murder of Jacob Wetterling. So 2024 this year marks 35 years since an 11-year-old boy was abducted from a dark rural road in 1989 in St. Joseph, Minnesota. And this is a small community with a population at that point in time of less than 3,000. This case terrified the community, stripping their safety and sense of innocence. This case went on to become one of the biggest mysteries in the state's history. It went unsolved for nearly 27 years.
Wow.
So Jacob Wetterling was born on February 17th, 1978, to parents Patty and Jerry Wetterling. They lived in the small rural community of St. Joseph, also known to the locals as St. Joe, Minnesota. The couple had four children, and in 1989, Amy was 13, Jacob was 11, Trevor was 10, and Carmen was 8. The Wetterlings purchased a peaceful house in the woods, and life was chaotic, but it was joyful. Jerry worked as a chiropractor. Patty was a stay-at-home mom. She adored her role amongst the chaos. Their schedules were jam-packed with school, sports, and various activities. Patty and Jerry described Jacob as a sweet, innocent boy who just had an amazing spirit. And I felt like I really got to know Jacob in this case. I really just dove deep into this one. And there were so many videos of him, you know, just 10 days before he disappeared, they had the camera on him and he went through and talked about the things that he liked. And it's just so heart-wrenching to think 10 days later, he was removed from his family.
And we'll never make a video again.
No.
And we'll never be with his family again.
It really cut deep. I actually had tears streaming down my face as I was watching a 2020 video yesterday.
Yeah, it's just something special about kids. You know, everybody listens knows we just love kids.
Yep. So it was the night of Sunday, October 22nd, 1989, and Jacob was riding his bike alongside his younger brother, who was 10-year-old Trevor, and Jacob's best friend, 11-year-old Aaron Larson. It was a dark, moonless night, and the trio rode down the rural street on their way home from the local video store, where they had rented the VCR tape, The Naked Gun.
Oh, man, video stores, those are fun.
Oh, I miss those days.
Just going in, looking behind the tape and being like, okay, is there one available? Yeah, it wasn't like that, like it is these days, kids. It was, you had to go, and if the tape wasn't there, you couldn't watch that movie.
Oh, I was always so bummed when I got in there and it wasn't there.
Yeah, the new release.
Yeah, I mean, our kids will never know that.
Nope.
So they rented The Naked Gun and they grabbed some candy as well. And they were going to have their candy as they watched their movie. Jacob and Aaron rode bikes while Trevor used his push scooter. The boys were taking advantage of the fact that they didn't have school the next day because they were having a day for teachers conference. So earlier that day, Jacob had hockey tryouts for his youth league in nearby St. Cloud. He felt he skated poorly. He wasn't happy with his performance, so he was kind of down on himself. So his dad, Jerry, took his son to go fishing at a nearby lake. He figured it would be a nice distraction for Jacob, you know, to ease his mind about how he had done that day. And oftentimes, we think we do worse than we actually did.
Yeah, especially those of us that are hardest on ourselves that expect perfection.
Mm-hmm. I know oftentimes I'm very hard on myself about the podcast.
Yeah, you almost cried the other day.
And Mike always has to bring me back up.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what Jerry was doing for Jacob. So afterwards, and you will like this, they all gathered together to watch Sunday football.
Yes, of course, just watched the draft this past couple, Thursday or whatever.
Yes, Mike and our son are huge football players, NFL specifically. So
fans, not players.
Did I say players?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
I just want to make that clear in case you're looking for me on Sundays, not going to be there.
No, he's not going to be on the field. He's going to be on the couch with some nachos.
Yes.
So, of course, they live in Minnesota. They're Vikings fans. So they all gathered as a family to watch the game. And then after the game, Jerry and Patty headed out to a dinner party with friends. They asked Jacob if he wouldn't mind babysitting while they were out because 13-year-old Amy was staying at a friend's house. They weren't going to be gone long, so Jacob was going to watch his 10-year-old brother and his 8-year-old sister. Really no big deal. Mm-hmm. So Jacob's asking his mom and dad if he could invite his best friend Aaron over, and they had no problem with that, so they said yes. So Patty and Jerry left, and then when they got to their friend's house, of course, this is 1989, there are no cell phones. They called home to give the kids the number for where they could be, where they were going to be if they needed them.
Perfect.
So then 10-year-old Trevor called his parents back. He spoke with his mom and asked if they could ride their bikes to rent a video. Patty said no, since it was getting dark outside. The boys had ridden their bikes to the local Tom Thumb convenience store where they wanted to go, but it was never at night after sunset. So the boys didn't give up this time. You know how it is. Try one parent. If they say no, try the other.
This is while he's supposed to be babysitting also?
Yeah.
Okay.
So 10-year-old Trevor called and asked. Patty said no. Now Jacob's calling the number back, getting a hold of his dad. Dad, can't we just go ride our bikes? It won't take us long.
Well, and they're probably like, he gets on the phone, he puts it over the receiver. He's like, just let them go. Like, we're having fun here. They're having fun. The least we can do, you know.
Exactly.
I don't blame him.
So, you know, of course, Jerry is concerned not about stranger danger at this point, because they're in this tiny Minnesota rural town where people aren't locking their doors. Everybody knows each other. There's that sense of safety in the community.
Yeah, I mean, it really doesn't get much safer than like middle, you know, Midwest and Minnesota.
Yes.
I mean, Minnesota is kind of like Canada where everybody's just nice. There's this like one of the Cameron's Little League coaches that coaches with us. Mm-hmm. He's from Minnesota. Super nice dude.
Good
like,
people.
I like all Vikings fans.
What do they say? Salt of the earth.
Right.
So I used to vacation in Minnesota every single summer. We would go to Lake Bemidji. It's a great place. And when I say rural, they're driving down like farmish land. I mean, they're not driving past houses when they're riding their bikes. So Jerry's more concerned about the cars that are driving fast because it's a country road. People do tend to drive fast. There's really no posted speed limits or anything like that. So he's more concerned that the kids wouldn't be seen while they're out on their bikes. And of course, being persistent, Jacob is saying, Dad, I'm going to wear my reflective vest. Aaron is wearing a white sweatshirt and Trevor will carry his flashlight. So they were very convincing. And finally, Jerry said, okay, you guys can go.
You got to let your kids experience things sometimes.
Absolutely. As scary as it is, you do. So when Jacob's 8-year-old sister Carmen didn't want to come with them, now they're calling their parents back and asking if their neighbor Rochelle Curtis could come over. This is someone that they were very, very familiar with. Could she just come over, watch Carmen? When we come home, Rochelle will go home. And they're like, yeah, that's fine.
Very responsible.
So knowing it was a 10-minute max bike ride each way, Patty agreed, and the boys headed out right about 8:30 p.m. So it was just after 9 p.m. and the boys were only a half mile from home when they were approaching a particularly dark stretch of road where a long gravel driveway led to a farm. And Trevor's flashlight caught movement of a figure coming from the driveway in front of them. They suddenly heard a gravelly voice shout, "Stop! Turn off the flashlight! I have a gun!" They were met with a man who appeared to be wearing a nylon mask holding a gun. He ordered them to place their bikes in the ditch and lay face down. For an initial moment, Aaron was convinced that this must be a high school student playing a trick on them. He actually remembers and believes that his first reaction was to chuckle, let out a laugh.
Yeah.
And then very, very quickly, this feeling faded fast and reality set in that this was not a joke. This was actually happening.
Oh, my God.
So the man asked the boys how old they were. Of course, at this point in time, they're laying face down in a ditch. And then he instructed Trevor to run into the woods and not look back or he would shoot him. He then turned his attention to Aaron. He repeated the same question, asking him his age, and then instructed Aaron to run to the woods, do not look back, or I will shoot you. This was the last time Jacob was seen alive. When Aaron caught up to Trevor after running about 100 yards, he finally had the courage to look back and see what was going on. There was absolutely no sign of Jacob or the man by the time they looked back. It was a particularly dark night. There was no moon. They're out in the countryside. There's not street lights.
Can't see 20 feet in front of you, much less 100 yards.
Really, all they could see when they were riding their bikes was like the flashlight beam, what that was picking up. So already there's no sign of them. Aaron and Trevor never saw any cars in the area because this man is approaching them on foot, including one driven by the man. The boys ran home immediately, and Rochelle remembers Trevor, followed closely by Aaron, busting into the house frantic. They explain that a man with a gun had taken Jacob.
Jeez.
I mean, can like you imagine this?
The absolute worst case scenario nightmare that if you get this call when you're at your friend's houses, you know, your kids just left to go rent a video. And you're getting this call, about to get it, saying your son was taken by a guy with a gun. Like, this doesn't sound real.
And Rochelle is a teenager. You know, she's the neighbor. So she immediately calls her father, who came over, called the Wetterlings to alert them of the situation, and then immediately dialed 911. So he's calling the Wetterlings, who are at a dinner party, to tell them this devastating, shocking news.
And at the same time, you know, this is... kind of cut you off here, but like, do you call 911 first so the cops can get into play and start looking for this? Or do you call the Wetterlings first? It's like, you have to tell these people that their kid is gone, right? But at the same time, you're wasting minutes that the police can start looking for this guy. Like, it's so much going on.
It sounds like he was literally on the phone with the Wetterlings for seconds.
Yeah.
So he basically, over the phone, told Jerry that a man with a gun had taken Jacob. You need to come home.
Yeah.
So Jerry is shell-shocked at a dinner party and immediately grabbed Patty and said, "We've got to go. Somebody took Jacob." Patty grabbed her purse. They rushed out the door. They didn't say goodbye to anybody. They just were in shock, and they left. As Patty and Jerry made their 20-minute drive home, the drive seemed absolutely endless.
Oh, my God. 20 minutes would seem like days.
Like days. And Patty is... rapid firing questions at her husband, who knows exactly what she knows. And this is exactly what I would do.
We've done this. You've asked me questions. I'm like, that's all I know. Everything I've already said is what you know and what I know.
I know, but when I'm in panic, I ask you questions. Yeah. So Patty is firing questions. Who would take a child? Who would do this? She's screaming at her husband, please drive faster. Jerry's afraid that he's going to get pulled over by a cop. It's going to delay them further. And Patty's telling him, but they can give us a police escort home.
That would be me. I would be like, I just don't want to get pulled over. Yeah, because then you have to pull over for them. If you don't, then all of a sudden they might, I don't know, like try to run you off the road or something because they think you're doing something right. Bad. It's all these thought processes.
What a horrible 20 minutes that this couple must have been experiencing.
Yeah.
So they're coming home. They have absolutely no idea what they're walking into. As they're arriving home, they immediately see a police car. So police immediately started their investigation and began searching for clues at the abduction site. They found tire tracks on a long driveway. And again, that's where the man came and approached them, was from this driveway. And this driveway sat adjacent to the road along with this driveway. They're seeing these adult and child size footprints that were similar to the Nike shoes that Jacob had been wearing. This is about 75 yards from where the boys had been confronted. The prints were in more of a shuffling, pulling motion rather than a natural walking motion. Mm. The hunt for Jacob quickly became one of the largest searches in Minnesota history, with a task force consisting of multiple agencies and multiple investigators. The governor called and offered up the National Guard, who then conducted a ground search covering about 30 miles. The driveway where Jacob was taken was only a few miles from the interstate, so they know if this guy was in a car, they could be anywhere by now. He could be in Vegas by now. You know, they're like saying he can go anywhere. So the officers asked for a photo of Jacob, and Patty removed his frame school photo from the wall where Jacob was wearing his yellow sweater. After Patty remembers looking up and seeing the smiling faces of her three other children on the wall, and there's Jacob's frame that's sitting empty. And she just remembers this small detail as just an utterly heartbreaking moment. Patty thought back to the night before. This is just the night before Jacob was abducted. He apologized to her for being a little crabby about issues that he felt he was having with skating with hockey. he asked her, you know, as he's apologizing, "Mom, do you want to play a game with me?" And she's up to her eyeballs. Her kids are all in different sports and activities. And she says, "Oh, I can't do it. I'm too busy at this moment." And looking back, she wishes more than anything that she could just take it back, but never fathoming that her son would be gone the next day.
Yeah, of course.
We never know.
Yeah.
But she saw, looked back at that moment and said, "I should have played that game with him."
I can't fault yourself.
10-year-old Trevor went to the police station the next day to give a tape confession about what happened the night before. Trevor and Aaron told the police that the man was somewhere around 5'9" to 5'10". He was about 180 pounds with a low, rough voice, as if he had a cold. That was a very outstanding thing that they noticed because, of course, it's really dark outside and this guy has a freaking nylon over his face and everything happened so fast. I think their interaction with the man was probably less than like maybe a minute or two.
Yeah, I mean, a 5'10 man, 180 pounds, basically talked about every single, you know, male at right. the time in America. So that was very important.
It was more of the voice that stood out than anything. Again, he's got this nylon mask to cover his face. He's wearing a dark coat, dark pants, and dark shoes. He carried a silver handgun. Jacob's case became national news very quickly because of the nature of what happened. It was a group of three boys innocently riding their bikes, in their quiet, seemingly safe town when a parent's absolute worst nightmare came true. I mean, this is like the whole era of stranger danger. And this actually happened and became reality. And their child was abducted by a complete stranger. So everybody in the nation just was horrified by this case. As the search for Jacob continued, investigators learned of a very similar case that happened 9 months earlier. 12-year-old Jared Shirel was walking home from a cafe at 9:45 p.m. on January 13th, 1989, the same year, 9 months earlier, in Cold Spring, Minnesota. This is only 10 miles away from where Jacob was abducted. That evening, Jared had been at an ice rink playing hockey. We're in Minnesota. Everybody plays hockey. So he's playing hockey with his friends, and afterwards they headed to a cafe. They were going to grab some milkshakes and French fries. And since Jared was so close to home, he just decided to walk. And when he was approximately three blocks from home, a white man stopped his car. He asked Jared if he knew where the Kramers lived. As Jared is trying to help this man with the directions, this man steps out of his car, grabs Jared, and puts him in the back seat of the car. The car is locked with child security locks, so Jared can't get out. Here, he is now driven to a remote location about 10 to 15 minutes away, and Jared was sadly sexually assaulted.
Oh, God, what...
This is
thing.
What stands out, though. The man threatened him with a gun, which Jared never saw. And in a moment, you'll see the consistencies with the two cases. So as this man's driving, Jared noticed a walkie-talkie type handheld radio device sitting on the passenger seat of this man's car. He could hear a man and a woman's voice coming from the walkie-talkie, but then the man reached over and turned it off as he was driving. After the assault, which took place in the back seat of the man's car, the assailant dropped Jared off and told him to run and not look back or he would shoot him.
Perfect.
Exact words that this man used to Trevor and Aaron.
Yeah, 100%. That's the guy. Million. Like, it's just one of those things. That's how, like, when you're online, you can find out who somebody is just based on how they talk, even mm-hmm. how they type. Like, use the same similar sentence structure and how they talk. Like, a lot of us have a lot of crutch words. You know?
Me, I do. I speak very similarly.
Yes, like at work, I notice I say efficiency all the time. If I'm just like, well, the maximum efficiency, and I'm like, okay, you got to get that out of your head, man. But like, yeah, that's a perfect example. They know mm-hmm. they've got, I mean, 90% chance this is the same dude.
So he threatened that if he went to police and told them what happened, he would get him after school and shoot him. During the sexual assault, the man had removed Jared's snowsuit, pants, and underwear and only allowed Jared his snowsuit back. This man kept his pants and underwear. Investigators could not deny just how similar the case was to Jacob's, down to the very words he yelled to Aaron and Trevor when they were told to run away.
This guy is an absolute sicko. I hope they find him.
Disgusting.
Gosh.
Since Jared survived the attack, he was able to report what happened to police and give a detailed description of the suspect's car, his clothing, and voice. A composite sketch had been made and released after authorities noticed the similarities between the two boys' abductions. The abductor was a man approximately in his 30s. He had a distinctive, deep, raspy voice.
Yeah, they got their guy.
And he said he had a gun, but he never saw the gun. This man just told him he did.
So, they don't got their guy. They know this but is they the know. Same guy.
They yeah. know. Well, they figure.
Right.
So, Jared is saying he was about 5'6" to 5'7", weighed about 170 pounds. He had dark brown mid-length hair, brown eyes, fat ears that stuck out, a fat nose, bushy eyebrows, rough, wrinkled skin, thick hands, and a pudgy beer belly. He had crooked bottom teeth that Jared described like cheese teeth.
Oh.
Isn't that so freaking disgusting?
Yeah, so I'm not a huge surprise.
He had an indent on his ring finger. He wore a brown baseball hat. He had a dark zip-up vest, a camouflage fatigues, and black army boots, and a military-style watch.
Wow, incredible detail from Jared.
I mean, amazing that this 12-year-old boy was able to take all of this in such a frightening moment.
My hero.
The search for Jacob continued, and investigators looked into a man named Dan Razier. Dan was a 34-year-old neighbor who lived with his parents on a farm whose driveway was at the location where Jacob was abducted.
Whoa.
So this is not far. This is a half mile from the Wetterlings. So this is a spot. His driveway is where police located the tire prints and these footprints with the dragging motion.
Well, I mean, that would be the first thing you would look at, right? The people that own that property. Right.
So again, Dan worked as a band teacher. On the night that Jacob was abducted, he was home alone. His parents were out of town. I think he said he was like organizing his music. He told investigators that between 9 and 9:30 p.m., his dog began barking at a car that was coming down the road. Because again, this is a quiet area. There's not a lot of traffic. So Dan looked out the window just by instinct because his dog is barking. He saw a small dark blue car that quickly turned around and then it was gone. Soon after, Dan went to bed. The next thing he knew, his dog was barking again. This time he looked out and he saw people gathered in the area with flashlights. At this point, Jacob has already been abducted. They're looking for him.
Investigation, yeah.
When Dan learned of Jacob's abduction, he told police about the car that he had seen between 9 and 9:30 on the night that Jacob was taken. He was convinced that this car was definitely associated with Jacob's case.
Okay.
After finding the shoe prints and tire prints, police soon hit a dead end in the investigation and found no sign of Jacob or his abductor.
Does Dan have a raspy voice or anything? No.
No.
Okay.
No, I've actually listened to recordings of Dan speaking. He did not at all have a raspy voice. No offense
to Dan. I just know that everybody's asking this, wondering the same thing that I am. So.
But is it possible that this person is trying to disguise his voice?
Maybe.
14 years went by, and a man came forward in 2004. Why 14 years later, I don't know, but he claimed to be the person who had turned around in the Razier driveway. And this now led police to believe that Jacob's abductor could have taken him by foot rather than by car. So now they're thinking that Dan is responsible. They're turning their attention back to Dan. Again, this is 2004. And basically, Dan is fully denying any kind of involvement in the case. And on October 20th, 2009, this is 2 days shy of the 20th anniversary of Jacob's abduction, this poor guy, Dan, I will tell you, Dan is not the guy.
Okay, good.
I
just want to know whether I should hate this guy with every ounce of my being or that I can just be okay with him.
No, and I honestly feel so sorry for this guy.
Yeah, well, everybody's probably, you know, pointing their fingers at him.
Sure. And everybody was. So now we're coming up to 2009. It's almost the 20th anniversary to the day of Jacob's abduction. And Patty was fitted with a wire and she purposely bumped into, in quotes, into Dan at the gym where he worked out. As they sat in the lobby of the gym talking, Patty straight up asked Dan, please look me in the eye and tell me that you had nothing to do with Jacob's abduction and disappearance. Dan looked her straight in the eye and said, I had nothing to do with your son's disappearance. The two ended up speaking for 45 minutes. Dan calmly answered every single one of Patty's questions. He told Patty that he wished he had been more alert on the night that Jacob went missing and had paid more attention to what his dog was barking at. But he was doing his own thing in the house.
Well, yeah, you know, and like our dog barks, it's like, shut up.
Exactly. It's more of an annoyance than anything. Later, Patty told the FBI that Dan was either innocent or he was a psychopath. Well, one of the two.
I mean, that's the thing I was going to say, is that a liar is going to be a good liar. I've never understood the look me in the eye and tell me. It's like a liar that does that has no problem doing
that. True. They have no qualms with lying.
Right, but I'm glad Dan wasn't the guy.
So after police searched his property, they conducted digs. They found no incriminating clues. He was eventually cleared of involvement, but his involvement, honestly, until 2016. And in the meantime, Dan's reputation was absolutely tarnished.
Well, you know that. I mean, especially now with social media, it would be even worse. I mean, 2014, he had it. So right. they all know Dan as the guy that possibly did it, you know, and that sucks.
So it wasn't until 2016 when we find out what actually happened to Jacob that Dan was cleared truly from this case. And we're talking about a small town. This poor guy's at the grocery store. Everybody's turning their carts away and running in the opposite direction, whispering.
Wow. Hey, guys. We'll be right back after this ad break. It's spring cleaning time, and there's a product called Smart Labels that your future self is going to love you for getting. Here's how it works. You buy the Smart Labels QR code labels on Amazon and stick them on your storage bins. Download the Smart Labels app, scan the QR code, and catalog all the stuff going into the bin with a name, description, and picture. Then, months down the road, when you're looking for that thing you know you stored somewhere, you can just search in the app and it'll tell you where you put it. Seriously, people are calling it organizing magic. So if you're doing some spring cleaning, getting ready for a summer move, or just wanting to get organized, you need to check out Smart Labels. Just do a search on Amazon for Smart Labels, one word, and get started with your Smart Labels pack today.
More than two decades passed. Now, blogger Joy Baker found an article in 1987 which detailed five incidents that involved young teenage boys being followed or assaulted by an unknown male in the nearby town of Painesville, Minnesota. So again, almost 20 years had gone by at this point.
Any idea how close this town is?
Yes, I will tell you exactly.
Thank you.
So oftentimes in these cases, the man involved told the boys not to turn around or they would be shot.
Right.
Same words.
Yep.
Painesville is 18 miles from Cold Spring, where Jared was abducted, 28 miles from St. Joseph, where Jacob was. So it's St. Joseph, then Cold Spring, then Painesville. So in one incident that took place in Painesville, two boys were riding their bikes in the dark of night in May of 1987. So this would have been 2 years before Jared and Jacob's cases. And a man lurched out from the trees and knocked one of the boys off his bike. This very boy had already been attacked by this exact man in February, months earlier.
Wow.
That's like getting hit by lightning twice.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? So the boy in February was leaving a pizza place. And at that time, a masked man grabbed the boy and threw him down a stairwell. He groped him. He spoke with him in a deep, low whisper. He told him that if he made a noise or moved, he would kill him. He asked him what grade he was in. And again, he asked Trevor and Aaron how old they were. He took the boy's wallet. He left on foot. In May, now the same man is grabbing him off of his bike and began to fondle him. The boy screamed, "You already got me!"
Oh my gosh! How what?
Can you imagine?
This
I
kid's
was stunned.
Be so, like,
what are the odds that this sicko targeted the same exact boy in February and then again in May?
You already
randomly.
Got me. That sucks,
so he's screaming,
man.
"You already got me!" The man then fled the area on foot, and in the meantime, his blue baseball hat fell off. These attacks were investigated, but no arrests were made and no connections were made between these painful incidents to Jared and Jacob. So now it's 2014, and this Joy Baker is finding this article from 1987.
Yeah, there's a lot of things popping up in this area about diddling kids.
Right. So the descriptions that the Painesville victims provided were similar to Jared's description, as well as Trevor and Aaron's descriptions. They describe this man as having a very gruff voice. Before Jacob was abducted, Aaron had been briefly fondled by the man. So they obviously knew that this man was a child sexual predator.
For sure.
Joy began investigating and blogging about Jacob's abduction in 2010, and Patty and Jerry were completely unaware of her existence until 2013, when Joy approached Patty at a speaking event. Patty was initially very wary of this woman who had taken such an interest in her son's case, but they quickly began talking and formed a friendship that morphed into an alliance. So, of course, Patty's at this event, and this lady's like, oh, yeah, you know, all about Jacob.
She knows pretty much all that Patty does. It's like, well, how do you know this much? Why are you so obsessed with my son?
And then Jerry hops on Joy's blog, and he's like, wow, this is actually really good stuff. They talk the next day. They spoke for like 2 hours, and then moving forward, they had this alliance.
You realize you're on the same team.
Yes. In addition to reaching out to Patty, Joy also contacted Jared. Jared is the one that was assaulted and attacked in January, right before Jacob was.
Right.
So in 2013, Joy is calling Jared about the 1987 article that she had found in the archives of the Painesville Press. This was when Jared first learned that the man told these young boys, "Don't look back or I'll blow your head off." In the summer of 2013, Jared agreed to team up with Joy on one condition, that his name not be associated with pursuing this connection. And he said, "This man threatened my life directly. I have children and they're number one. Their safety is number one." Obviously, now his name is out in the media. He's got his photo there. That's why I shared his name in this. Otherwise, I wouldn't have.
I figured there's a good reason.
Yeah. Jared, the Wetterlings, and Joy all believe the same man could be involved in all of the Painesville assault, Jared's abduction, and Jacob's kidnapping, which prompted Joy to reach out to Stearns County Sheriff's investigators. They asked her to send them the article. They were very skeptical about the connection. They believed that Jared and Jacob's case was connected. They felt that this other five attacks that had happened in Painesville were not.
Well, I mean, I get it. There's nothing to connect them necessarily besides somebody essaying a child, a boy. But it's, you know, at least I had that connection of him saying the same thing.
Right.
But it's like, well, how much more do you want, man? Do you want them to be like, "Hey, my name's Bob and I like diddling boys"? You know, like, do you want that to happen every single time? It's not going to be that easy necessarily.
Exactly. You got to try to connect this.
I can't, like, you should have probably put these together earlier.
You know, Joy's this blogger mom who's putting
it professional.
Together. She's not a paid investigator.
Right. But so, at the same time, this is all she's doing while they have a million different cases.
100%. So starting in 2004, the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and the Stearns County Sheriffs believe that Jacob's kidnapper was on foot rather than in a car. And again, this theory came in 2004 after that man came forward and said, "I'm the guy that turned around in the Razier driveway." Despite the doubts voiced, Jared and Joy remained absolutely persistent. They spent hundreds and hundreds of hours tracking down leads and locating the Painesville victims. They wanted to talk more with them to get more details. They contacted the Stearns County authorities as much as 3 times a day and as little as 3 times a week. They were super diligent. So Joy, Jared, and Patty remained diligent, participating in interviews to voice their confidence that these cases were all connected by one man. And it all paid off when Jared and Joy were featured on John Walsh's CNN show, The Hunt. And this led to a request to open an FBI cold case review in November of 2014. They want this fresh set of eyes looking at these cases again. So in 2014, the FBI's Child Abduction Rapid Deployment Team conducted a cold case review of the Jacob Wetterling investigation and began to look more closely at a lifelong Painesville resident named Danny Heinrich. Heinrich was a member of the Minnesota National Guard who would have been in his mid-20s, right around 26 years old, at the time of both Jared's attack and Jacob's abduction. This was a name that Patty had heard before. She had heard this name soon after Jacob was abducted, as he was one of 5 to 7 people that they really couldn't fully clear. And his name would come up time and time again in the investigation.
Interesting.
Heinrich had no prior arrests for sexual assault. He did have issues holding down a job. He came from a troubled childhood. And his physical description fit the man involved in the Painesville incidents, including Jared's abduction and Jacob's, especially his low, gravelly voice.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge.
Mm-hmm. So 2 months after Jacob was abducted, Heinrich was questioned by the FBI. It was December 16th, 1989. He claimed that he couldn't remember where he was on the nights that Jared or Jacob had been abducted. He may have been washing his clothes. Maybe he was visiting a friend on October 22nd when Jacob was taken. Very vague, no solid alibi whatsoever. And again, it's only 2 months after Jacob was taken.
Yeah.
I know it's hard if somebody asked you what you were doing on a night 2 months ago.
I would have no idea.
You would probably not know.
I'd have
to
ask you, be like, what did I do this day?
Mm-hmm. I'd have to pull up our calendar.
Yeah. And not to mention, like, he doesn't have to have an alibi. It's like they don't have anything on him.
Right.
Besides the raspy voice and the description. But it's like you need more.
Right. So he had been arrested twice. Once was for burglary. Once was while driving while intoxicated. He denied wearing camouflage clothing or army boots while off duty. He denied any knowledge of the abductions of Jared and Jacob. And I call a huge BS on that because everyone in this area knew of those cases.
Oh, so not even saying that I didn't do it, just saying, oh, I never heard of it.
He denied any knowledge. Huh. Jared described the car his abductor drove as dark blue, a four-door car with a luggage rack on the trunk. It had a blue cloth interior, and the car had a new smell. At the time, Heinrich was driving in 1987, and of course, that was the year that he was abducted. Or no, he was abducted in 89. So, you know, I had a two-year-old new-ish car, and it did have a new smell, so that's possible. So he was driving a 1987 four-door dark blue Mercury Topaz. There was no luggage rack on the trunk. The car had been repossessed in March of 1989, though the current owners brought the car to police so they were able to inspect it. Jared was allowed to sit in the car. He felt confident. This felt like the car that he was sitting in after he had gotten abducted.
I mean, what, 20, 30 years later or whatever?
No, this was in...
Shortly thereafter. Okay.
Yeah. So he said on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most similar, he said it was about an 8 or a 9 in similarity. Samples were taken from the car that did match the fibers found on Jared's snowsuit.
Wow.
But again, it's a Mercury Topaz. There's many people who have that kind of car. So you can't say...
And it's Minnesota.
This is our guy.
A lot of people have the snowsuit.
Well, it was on Jared's snowsuit.
Oh.
That he was wearing when he was abducted.
Well, has he ever been in a Mercury Topaz? Anybody he knew owned something like that?
I don't know.
I mean,
so that's the whole point. That's incriminating, but you can't arrest somebody on that. So on January 7th,
you could search them. I mean, you could definitely probably get a search warrant.
Right. And I will tell you more about that.
Oh, great.
On January 17th, 1989, this is 4 days after Jared was attacked, he was shown a photo lineup of six males with similar builds and characteristics. He selected a picture of Heinrich and one other man. Heinrich was a Wilmar National Guard or Army Reserves, and he did frequently wear military fatigues. Of course, Jared described his abductor as having military fatigues on. Danny Heinrich is saying, oh, I only wear them when I'm on duty.
And a walkie-talkie.
Right. He also fit the physical description. He was 26 years old at the time of the attack. He was 5'5", 160 pounds. He had brown hair, brown eyes. Keep in mind, Jared described his attacker about being in the 30s, so close, about 5'6" to 5'7", 170 pounds, brown hair, brown eyes. So definitely check the boxes on that. On January 12th, 1990, this is 1 year after Jared's attack, Heinrich was re-interviewed because, of course, they're looking at him again because of Jacob's case. He indicated that the tennis shoes that he was wearing at the time were the only pair that he owned. He voluntarily provided them because we did have footprints in the dirt where Jacob was taken.
So knowing that he didn't use them at this time.
Well, he did say they were the only shoes he owned.
Right.
So he did give them voluntarily to law enforcement. He also provided them with hair samples. 2 days later, he allowed law enforcement to remove his rear car tires from his 1982 blue Ford EXP, which he would have been driving before. He was driving it maybe 2 months before Jacob was abducted. So that's the car he would have been using on the night Jacob was abducted. But because, so they were a match, like the shoes and the tires were a match, but they lacked specific characteristics. Like the one FBI agent said, had there been like a slash in one of the tires that you could say that specifically links it to him because somebody else could have had those tires.
Yeah, but those two things could at least probably get you, again, a good search warrant for his house and just turn over everything.
So they couldn't get an arrest warrant based on the fact that the shoes and the tires
matched. An arrest warrant, but a search warrant.
Well, they did.
Okay.
So Heinrich's father's home was searched on January 24th, 1990, 1 year after Jared's attack, 3 months after Jacob's abduction. He was living in that location at the time that Jacob was abducted. They found a carrying case for a portable scanner and a black pair of lace-up boots, two brown hats, a camouflage shirt and pants, in addition to other items. During Jared's abduction, he noted a walkie-talkie radio device on the seat. This could have been a police scanner. He heard voices coming from it.
Yep.
The man that abducted him wore a brown baseball hat. There's a brown hat in Heinrich's house. He also wore camouflage fatigues and black lace-up boots. Those are at the house.
When he said he doesn't have any other shoes.
He said, yeah, exactly. So they found six photos of children in a locked trunk. One depicted a child wrapped in a towel. This child was coming out of a shower. The other was a boy in his underwear. He said he had met these boys while he was at the Wilmar Regional Treatment Center. So I guess because it didn't depict nudity, that was not anything that he could be arrested on. It wasn't necessarily considered pornography.
Yeah, I mean, makes sense. It's like, man, we almost had him. Just if these kids had less clothes on, we'd be able to bring him in right away.
So the next day, it was January 25th, 1990, Heinrich participated in a physical lineup with six men. This time, Jared was not able to identify any of the men. So initially, he had done the photo lineup. This was only a few days afterwards. He did pick Heinrich as one of the two. This is a year later. So he said that he couldn't identify any of the men as the one who kidnapped him and assaulted him. He did indicate that Heinrich and one other person was similar in build to the person who kidnapped him. He felt Heinrich would be a 4 on a scale of 1 to 10 in similarity. On February 9th, 1990, Heinrich was arrested on probable cause for the kidnapping and sexual assault of Jared, but he had emphatically maintained that he was not guilty. He was later released without being charged. In the meantime, investigators did continue to keep a close eye on him. They installed a GPS tracking device on his car. They hoped that he would drive to the site where he potentially discarded Jacob's remains, because oftentimes people do revisit the grave site. He never did. He didn't do anything, you know, amiss in the time that they had this GPS on his car. He basically just drove from work to home. He ventured out very little. Police found it odd that someone capable of so many attacks could seemingly go on to be a law-abiding citizen for the next 26 years, as he did.
I would agree. That's crazy.
So when an FBI team, now they're revisiting this case in 2014, they're highly trained in child abductions, and it's also 2014, there's more technology available.
More profiles of
100%.
Past, you know, guilty people.
So they're conducting this cold case review of Jacob's investigation, and they immediately focused on the evidence taken from Danny Heinrich. They were specifically looking at these tire and shoe prints that were left behind at the scene of Jacob's abduction. It was great evidence. They agreed with that. It was a match. But again, they're saying it's not solid enough. They can't say these are his tires.
Right.
You know, it could be another one.
Yeah, I would agree. It's enough to get a search warrant, but you got to have something else. You got to find one of the kids' hairs or something on him.
So during the review, investigators focused on Jared's assault and the similarities between his case and Jacob's. At the time of Jared's attack, DNA, it's 1989, it wasn't regularly used in criminal cases. But as DNA testing became more advanced, there was finally a break in the case, and it didn't come until 2012. So this is 2 years before they're doing this cold case review. So in 2012, they determined that an unknown male DNA was found on the clothing. Wow. Because as this disgusting human being was assaulting Jared, he was able to transfer his DNA onto Jared's clothing. So they did see there was this unknown male, but they couldn't match it to anyone. So now they go to the hair that the FBI had on file. And who did it match to?
Danny Heinrich.
Danny Heinrich. So now investigators could prove what they had always suspected, that Heinrich had been responsible for Jared's abduction and assaults.
Okay.
So in the end, Heinrich was never able to be charged with Jared's abduction and assault because the statute of limitations had run out.
Oh my God. This is so, you were researching this case. Mm-hmm. So you're like, the statute of limitations. And I was like, what? Oh, yeah. No, I knew that would come up eventually.
So because by the time it was a match, it had run out. And so I was so pissed off when I was reading this. I'm like, that's bullshit. I'm like, it was 1989. They didn't have this ability to make the match. I'm like, what is with the statute of limitations? So I start looking into what, you know, where did this all come from? So in general, the United States federal law has a statute of limitation of 5 years, unless there is a specific legal language for offenses that stretch beyond that time. For example, there is no statute of limitations for capital murder. The purpose of statutes of limitations is to protect would-be defendants from unfair legal action, which can arise from the fact that after a significant passage of time, relevant evidence could be lost, damaged, or not retrievable. Memories of witnesses cannot be clear.
I agree with that. Memories.
But DNA is scientific.
Yeah, we got to relook at that and say certain things are readmissible because, yeah, DNA doesn't change.
It doesn't lie.
That's how it is forever. Like, maybe say, you know, the statute of limitations on witnesses, you can have right. that. But yeah, there's certain things we got to change that.
So now I will follow up that thought by saying some U.S. states have eliminated the statute of limitations for serious felony sex crimes, while others are set now to 10 to 20 years or more. Murder often, again, has no statute of limitations, regardless of where the crime was committed. Because I was just so mad that we scientifically have proven that this is the guy that did this to Jared, but he can't be, charged.
Yeah, Jared's like, sorry, I didn't die. You know, then we'd be able to get this guy in jail. But because I lived and he didn't kill me, then he's fine. Like, that's horrible.
Exactly. With this DNA match now, though, a search warrant was obtained for Heinrich's home and detached garage where he was living at the time in Annandale, Minnesota.
Now, they already searched that place,
no,
right?
No, they searched his father's house back in, what, did I say 1990?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why didn't they search the other place? I guess it wasn't
this
attached.
This is the house that he's living in currently.
Okay.
In, what was this, 2015, 16?
Got it.
So the warrant alleged that he may have been involved in 8 incidents that occurred between 1986 to 1988 involving boys ranging in age between 12 and 16 years old who were assaulted in various locations within the city of Painesville. These are the cases that Joy had referred to, saying these cases have to be linked to Jared and Jacob. I know at the time she was only reading about 5. It ended up being 8. So during these years, Heinrich was living in Painesville. All of these assaults took place within several blocks of his home. In the case where the attacker left his baseball hat behind, remember he got that same kid twice in May of 1987, yeah. His blue baseball hat fell off his head at that point. So the DNA from that hat was tested. 80% of the population was able to be excluded. Heinrich's DNA could not be excluded. Let's just say he's the guy. So as the search for his home is underway, these guys are in the house searching. This is July 28th, 2015. This is 2 weeks after his DNA was a match for what was found on Jared's clothing. So as his house is being searched, 2 agents are sitting with him on his patio table. They're secretly recording him in a video. And, you know, at the same time, they're finding that his house is very neat and tidy. He's got 2 cats. But otherwise, if you were to walk into this house, you'd be like, wow, this guy's pretty neat. So at first glance, nothing was amiss. And as he's sitting at this table, he admitted that they would find pornography. And when he's sitting at the table, I watched this video. He did not say child pornography. He said pornography. He ensured the investigators that they would not be finding any sort of human remains or anything pertaining to Jacob Wetterling. When he was asked about the Painesville attacks, he said, "I never touched anyone, period. That's the God's truth." So investigators were very, very quickly able to find these neat and tidy, orderly binders that contained child pornography and child erotica. Mm. They found bins of child-sized clothing, wigs, and handcuffs, as well as 922 VHS tapes, Many included child actors. Some of these tapes contained hours of recording of Heinrich at a playground or viewing boys as they rode on their bikes. Like, what the hell is this guy sitting outside of a freaking park with like his huge camera? And I those cameras back in the 80s were friggin' massive. My parents used to like always do their home videos. Cause at this point in time when Jacob was taken, we were 10 years old. Like we were the age of these kids that were involved in these cases. Yep. So I'm picturing this frickin' 26-year-old creep sitting outside a park with his huge video camera.
He's probably pretending that he was recording his own kids or something.
Ugh, what a just disgusting human being.
Gross.
So there was no direct evidence found in his home that did link Heinrich to Jacob or Jared. But again, he has 922 tapes. On some of these tapes, there were news reports about Jacob's case. So he was definitely interested in Jacob's case.
Something that sucks is somebody had to watch all these tapes.
Yes. Like, somebody had to sit there and watch this.
Every single one of them
to see what else was on there. Ugh. Was there a recording of him with Jacob? So can you imagine having to go through 922 VHS tapes and watch what this disgusting human has recorded?
And it's not even one person. There are probably dozens of people that had to get through them because they had to do it as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm.
So because of the findings of child pornography, Heinrich was able to be arrested. He was arrested in October of 2015 on federal charges. At this point, authorities also announced that he was a person of interest in Jacob's abduction, probably because they found the news reports about Jacob's case. So close to three decades had passed since Jacob's abduction, and in those years, Patty held out hope that somehow her son could still be alive. She really did a lot of focus on cases that she would hear in the media that children came home after being gone for 20 plus years and thought in her heart that maybe her son could still somehow be alive out there.
Sounds like a positive lady.
She's amazing. Investigators spoke with Patty and Jerry at this time, and they asked them, how do you want to move forward? They asked them if they wanted justice or answers. Patty only wanted Jacob, straight up. So Danny Heinrich was offered a deal. If he pleaded guilty to one count of child pornography in federal court, he would receive a 20-year sentence if he was able to provide a credible confession to Jacob's case. So nearly 1 year after his arrest, on August 31st, 2016, 53-year-old Heinrich led investigators to where Jacob's remains were recovered. Investigators immediately saw red material from Jacob's hockey jacket that he was wearing that night. It was blatantly sticking out above ground as they arrived at this location. Patty and Jerry got the devastating call about the jacket, and they described it as a moment that made their blood run cold. It was now confirmed that their beloved son would never be coming home. In this moment where the hope of Jacob's return, excuse me, sorry.
Oh, soak it in. It sucks, man. It's horrible.
Because all of this time, she thought, maybe, it's possible that he's out there. And now that hope was just gone. But at the same time, she did feel a sense of peace. After nearly 27 torturous years, going over in your head over and over what happened to Jacob after this person that Aaron and Trevor described with a nylon over his face holding a gun, what happened to him? Where was he taken? What kind of pain did he live through? Is he still living? Is he in pain right now? They finally had the confirmation that Jacob was at peace. After they left the area where Jacob's remains were found, Patty and Jerry had to pull their car over and contact their three children to let them know this is all over.
And that they
found Jacob.
And that they love their kids. And that honestly, I don't blame Patty for saying, I just want to know where he is.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's going to get his. Don't worry. But.
So, you know, obviously with this plea agreement, they're agreeing to the fact that he's not going to get charged with what happened to their son. But they wanted to know, and I don't blame them at all for that.
No.
So on September 6, 2016, Heinrich gave his full official confession to abducting, assaulting, killing, and later burying Jacob. And now we have every answer to what happened. He He said that as he drove around on the night of October 22nd, 1989, he was driving on the dead end road when he noticed the three boys that were riding their bikes. He could tell they were going in the direction to, you know, where the stores would be and things like that. He saw Trevor with his flashlight. At that point in time, he made the decision to pull into the Razier driveway and wait for them. So basically, he turned around in that area and then parked down the road and then proceeded on foot. So he faced the direction of the road that he knew they would be coming back on. 20 or so minutes later, here they come. So Heinrich grabbed his mask, put it on, grabbed his revolver, and he walked to the road and approached the three innocent boys. As Trevor and Aaron described, he forced them to lay face down in the ditch and asked them their names and ages, and he took out his .38 revolver. The boys offered to give them their VHS tape. These are 10 and 11-year-old boys. Here, just take this. Heinrich knocked the videotape out of their hands, and they shined their flashlight in his face. He told them not to do that, and at that point, he told Trevor and Aaron, run away and don't look back. Heinrich handcuffed Jacob, and he put his hands handcuffed behind his back. He put him in the front passenger seat of his car, and this part really broke my heart. At this point in time, Jacob asked him, what did I do wrong? Oh, and he did nothing wrong.
I don't even want to hear the rest.
He was a little boy riding his bike. It was a Sunday night when he didn't have school, and he just wanted to get a friggin' video and some lollipops to have with his friends and his brother.
Yeah.
So as Heinrich drove out of town, he had his stupid police scanner out on the seat, just as he did with Jared's case.
Because he wanted to know how quickly he was going to be being...
He wanted to be in the know of what to expect and where the police were and, you know, when they were aware of what was happening.
Yeah, and of course, he's a professional at this by this point because he's done it a dozen times or whatever.
So he could hear a lot of activity happening over the radio as they called in about Jacob's abduction. So he decided to drive toward his hometown of Painesville. Again, this is 28 miles away. As they drove, he instructed Jacob to lean forward and duck down in his seat. And I will tell you, just to give you a sense of warning, I'm not going to give you any details about what happened. So he ducked down, and I mean in terms of his attack.
Yeah.
So he had told him to duck down and hide. And then when they were out of St. Joseph, he allowed him to sit back up. Before he got to Painesville, Heinrich turned onto a road where there was a field next to a grove of trees. He pulled off near a gravel pit and stopped his car as close to the grove of trees as he could get. He took Jacob out of the car. He forced him to undress. He did sexually assault him. After 20 or 30 minutes, Jacob said he was cold, and Heinrich allowed him to get dressed. Jacob asked if he was going to take him home, and when he told him he couldn't take him all the way home, Jacob began to cry. On the way back to the car, Heinrich noticed that there was a police car. Excuse me.
This is a horrible, horrible person. Man, alive. I don't even know how people like this exist
in our world, and I'm breathing our oxygen.
I'm hearing a police car is coming. So
he sees this police car driving, and it has its lights on. And this sight of this car made him panic. At this point in time, he pulled out his unloaded revolver. He loaded it with two rounds. He instructed Jacob to turn around. He told him that he had to use the bathroom. Jacob turned around, and Heinrich raised his revolver to the 11-year-old boy's head. Jacob had no idea, because again, he's being told that he just turn around, I have to pee. So he holds the gun up. The gun clicked once because it didn't line up. He pulled his trigger a second time. It went off. When Heinrich looked toward Jacob, Jacob was still standing. So he raised his revolver and shot again. And this time, Jacob went down. Sorry.
Don't apologize for being a human being that cares, unlike this piece of garbage. Like, I mean, what does he deserve? Like, nothing. He deserves, like, acid poured on his eyeballs. Like, I don't, like, there's nothing you can do to, like, make anything better. This guy is sick and gross, and I don't care what kind of a childhood he had. I don't care about him as a human being.
So it took two shots, and he confirmed that Jacob was gone. And he got in his car. He went home. He left Jacob just there. And as far as investigators know, Heinrich hadn't killed before or after Jacob. So they asked him the question, like, why? And I thought the same thing when I was reading this report about his confession. I thought in my head, why? And that's exactly right. So I think had that car not driven by at that moment, he would have let Jacob go. And that gutted me. Just gutted me that it was just an unfortunate moment when the car who was going to try to help Jacob, the sight of that made him panic, which made him get rid of Jacob.
God, and the cop was right there too and could have seen something.
He let everybody else go. So I truly believe had that car, and again, I'm not blaming that officer. He was doing his job, but it was just an unfortunate moment. And had that not happened, I do think he was going to let Jacob go. And a couple of hours later, Heinrich wanted everything to kind of calm down, die down. He returned to the area with the intention of burying Jacob's body. He dragged Jacob's remains 100 yards off to the north. He realized that the stupid shovel he brought was not large enough and remembered that there was a construction company just nearby. So he headed in that direction with the intention of, you know, maybe finding a larger shovel. But he noticed a bobcat skid steer digger. And he must be familiar with this construction company because he knew where the key to the digger was. So he actually got the digger and drove the bobcat to where Jacob's body laid and dug a grave.
That's pretty intensive.
Crazy. So he buried Jacob's fully clothed body minus his shoes, which had fallen off. He said it was after midnight. It's a remote area. There's not traffic in this spot. He brought the bobcat back. He returned the key as if it never happened. He went to the gravesite. He concealed it with brush and, you know, grass. And then he realized that Jacob's shoes had not been buried with him. So he began to walk toward his Painesville apartment and discarded Jacob's shoes in a ravine 100 yards down the road. Approximately 1 year later, Heinrich returned to this site after midnight with a flashlight. He wanted to scope things out, see what the state of the gravesite was. And he noticed that the grave was partially uncovered. Jacob's red jacket was visible above ground. He had an army entrenching tool with him as well as a garbage bag, and he proceeded to gather as many remains as he could. He didn't even need to dig at all since much of Jacob's remains had just been on the surface of the ground. He placed Jacob's remains in his jacket in this bag. He relocated it to its final resting spot on a rural farm in Painesville, which was really just across the highway. He used his tool to dig a hole about 2 feet deep. He placed Jacob's remains in this hole, which he covered with the red jacket and then buried it. Among Jacob's remains, investigators were also able to recover Jacob's number 11 soccer jersey that he had worn the night that he was taken. Once Heinrich was finished giving his full confession of Jacob's abduction, assault, and murder, he went on to confess to kidnapping and the sexual assault of Jared Shirell in January of 1989. He admitted that he was in the area of Cold Spring with just the intention of finding a child to abduct. He drove to Cold Spring to find a child. I mean, I'm just imagining this creep trolling the streets.
Yeah.
He indicated that he kept Jared's pants and underwear as a souvenir. When he threatened to shoot Jared, he didn't even have a gun at that point. As part of the plea agreement, prosecutors agreed not to charge Heinrich with Jacob's murder, nor the 8 incidents from Painesville, as a statute of limitations in those cases had already run out. There was also not enough evidence to say this was the guy. Heinrich has never admitted to his involvement in those cases to police. He was sentenced to 20 years for the possession of child pornography. As the years went by after Jacob's abduction, his family held out hope, like I had said, that he would one day return home. Patty, Jacob's mom, was convinced that her son would one day reappear and that the nightmare they were living could be put behind them. Patty had dreams about Jacob coming home, how they would heal, what they would do together as a family. In order to cope with Jacob's disappearance, Patty began writing her son letters as a way of connecting with him while he wasn't there. If he came home, she wanted to be sure that he knew that they were doing everything in their power to find them, and she worried he would think in his head, like, why aren't they finding me? Are they not looking for me?
Yeah.
In one letter, she wrote, "Dear Jacob, my heart hurts as days pass by without you. I wrestle over the details again and again. Who could have done this? Where are you, Jacob? I love you, Jacob, and I promise I will never stop searching for you. Love, Mom." Sorry, God, this is a tough one.
No, I mean, it's important to, all of us need to sit and think about this.
So, you know, of course, at this point in time, Patty's now a 75-year-old mother of three grown children. She made the decision to turn her grief into action, and this woman is amazing. She became a passionate advocate for missing children, and her husband describes it as, once Jacob was gone, Patty basically turned into a bulldog. Did I say Jerry said that?
I don't know.
Jerry, her husband, said that. So she basically traveled the nation to speak with parents and investigators about child abduction and exploitation. All of Patty's efforts paid off, and in 1994, Congress passed the Jacob Wetterling Act that created a national sex offender registry.
Wow, that created it?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Unbelievable. So when Jacob's investigation...
Not in real quick, why the hell that wasn't just done already? I mean, somebody... Amazing.
I mean, I guess it had to come from somewhere.
I guess, yeah. And thank God for Patty.
Yeah. She went to the White House. She met with Bill Clinton. And that's where this was all put into place.
It's like a no-brainer of all no-brainers. It's like, well, yeah, we should definitely do this.
Yeah.
Like, let's fast track it. Let's go.
Completely.
Well, I mean, DNA technology was advancing quickly. That makes sense.
So when Jacob's investigation came to a halt, Patty feared that the case might never be solved. She had never imagined that it would take herself, who was a grieving mother, Joy, who was a blogger, and Jared, who at this point was a 37-year-old plumber, to help solve this case. Patty feels that Joy's support and investigative work helped bring attention to the investigation as police followed the leads that she unearthed. Because, of course, they went on to John Walsh's show, Jared and Joy. And that's what spurred this whole 2014 cold case review, which led to this whole thing happening. Patty admits that she was initially skeptical and soon realized that Joy was asking the questions that nobody else had. Finally learning what happened to her son all those years earlier was devastating to Patty and her family. She recalls the time as a dark and horrible time. She was saying, you know, all those years she wondered and pictured her son being an adult, and really he lost his life within like maybe an hour of being taken.
Well, she was trying to keep hope alive, and you can't blame her, whatever you need to do to, you know, survive basically.
But she is forever grateful to Joy and her efforts to put her son's killer behind bars. She went from asking, who the hell is Joy Baker, to being one of her closest friends.
That's great.
In 2023, Patty released a memoir, which she wrote with the help of Joy, and it's titled Dear Jacob, A Mother's Journey of Hope. In it, she tells the story of what happened to Jacob and how, as she searched for her son, she found her true purpose. After Jacob was kidnapped, Patty made it her mission to try to prevent her kids from living in fear, afraid of the world. She refused to allow the man who took Jacob away to also take her marriage, because we know in cases like this, where something like this horrific thing happens, there's a huge statistic. I don't know if it's 80%. I might be wrong on that.
In general, suffice to say, anytime there's like trauma for, you know, with children in a marriage, it usually ends.
And she said, you know, her and Jerry, they lived through hell and they did have to fight to keep their marriage. But she would not allow this man who took her son to also end her marriage.
Sounds like a very strong woman.
She's amazing. And, you know, basically take the sense of safety away from her other children. She wanted them to continue to believe in their dreams and go after their full potential. She is determined to keep fighting for children. And that is the case of the abduction and the murder of Jacob Wetterling. And of course, we're figuring out who did this to Jared, as well as the eight other boys that were attacked in Painesville. Even though he didn't get sentenced to any of these cases, this man is behind bars and hopefully will not see the light of day.
Oh, I hope he sees more than that. I hope like somebody drags his face against a brick wall. Like I want so much pain. I mean, maybe he wants it. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. Whatever he doesn't want, like I want that to happen to him. This guy cannot live in our society.
No, absolutely not. He's a very sick man. But the I just wanted to mention, if you look into Patty's book, again, it was released in October of 2023. It's like very well rated on Amazon. There's a picture of Jacob and there's a picture of a porch light. And the porch light is there because every night from the night that Jacob was taken, they made sure the porch light was on just in case he came home. So that was very symbolic to the case. And I'm sorry, I really struggled through telling this story without crying. It was just really tough for me.
Why do you feel you need to apologize?
Because it's not professional.
Are we professionals?
No, I mean, clearly not.
I'm not to put like light on the subject. We're human beings, right? Yeah. We're not like TV reporters that are not... TV reporters have a job to do, but like we're human beings. It's okay to react like with emotions, you know? Like, if some of my coworkers listen to this, if you don't like a guy like choking up and crying, then go to hell. You know, it's where we're humans. Like that's what the worst thing is, like when people are expected to act a certain way and you don't, and if people don't like it, then shove it up your wazoos.
Yeah. And it's just the nature of the case. Like, and that's why they said it so quickly became national news, was it's every parent's worst nightmare. Like, your kids are innocently biking. Like, how much more innocent can you get than a video rental and some, you know, lollipops to being taken by this lunatic?
And anybody that's ever been a kid, you can associate with that. You're out with your friends, just biking around, no care in the world, having a blast, and just everything in your life changes. And then that freaking kid that got, you know, assaulted twice. Like, twice. You already got me.
So this man caused so much fear in three towns, because Painesville was, you know, terrified. Cold Spring was terrified. St. Joe was terrified. I mean, it just like caused so much fear. And the poor Wetterling family, I mean, Trevor was with his brother when he was taken. They were just traumatized. Aaron was traumatized. He slept on his parents' bedroom floor for months because he was convinced this guy would be coming back for him.
Like, and another thing, you always hear that in jail, like people that do stuff to kids get like bad treatment. Like, if this guy's still alive, I don't believe it.
He's still alive.
Like, somebody needs to do something. I mean, alive is fine, but like, at least hurt him bad.
And like, just the thing I keep coming back to is like, what makes a person's brain so sick to be attracted to children? Is just beyond me.
It's something I don't believe that can be fixed.
Like, what is it? Is it faulty wiring chemicals? Like, yeah. I just don't understand.
I have no idea on the whole process, but I think it's kind of like preferences, you know? Let's say I like girls with red hair or something, you know? And it's like, you know, that's what I like. And as I get older, I like women that are older, you know? I like your age, my age. I like that. Thank goodness. Because, like,
I mean, thank goodness.
Can you imagine just being like, you can't control it? You're just attracted to, like,
oh,
you
know, my, it's, gosh, like,
no, man. And those people can't live among us. And now, like, I read a story about somebody getting physically castrated, and that's probably the best thing to do. Like, this person can't live how they are. I know it's very barbaric, but it's testosterone, man. It's something that makes us crazy, and it's got to just be cut off, literally.
Yeah.
So it's horrible. So thank you for telling a story, and thank you to the Wetterlings for being just such strong people.
Yeah, and Jared, because...
Oh, Jared,
I mean,
sorry.
To think about Jared, he was a married father with kids, and he had to come out and relive the trauma he experienced as a 12-year-old. Same with the Painesville incidents. I mean, that takes a lot of courage.
Absolutely.
And these people they're just all amazing.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for listening. And if you really enjoy what we do, we have a way to get over, I think, 40 more bonus podcasts.
No, Mike, I think there's like over 60.
Okay.
You, well,
over
silly, 40, silly
over 50,
man.
Over 60. Yeah,
but 60 is
more.
Is 20 more than 40.
Yeah. So go ahead and just become an Apple subscriber or a Patreon. It's all in our show notes. And we want to welcome the latest member of the Crime and Coffee couple, Sarah. And we also got like 5 Apple subscribers. So if you want to be shouted out on Apple, just send us a message through Instagram. Crime and Coffee 2 is our handle, and send a message. And we appreciate the heck out of all of you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on YouTube also, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all those. So come and find us, and we'll see you over there.
Absolutely. And we'll be back again Wednesday with a bonus and Sunday with a regular. And until next time, bye!